Last week on What's Going On with Earl Ingram, we sit down with two men who know the prison system from the inside out. Both served time here in Wisconsin, and now they're using their experiences to fight for prison reform and change the way returning citizens are seen. From the struggles of reentry to the importance of giving people a second chance, they share their journeys, their work, and their vision for a fairer system. Don't miss it. Airing this week on streaming platforms. Follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you follow your podcast. Please like and subscribe as well. Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. Got a great program lined up for you today. In the face of what is transpiring in this nation as we speak, the President of the United States has done something unprecedented. He sent the National Guard into the Capitol to take control over what happens in the city, in Washington, D.C., and the police department basically kind of being and playing second fiddle. And there are people who are saying we're tired of crime, even though the numbers prove that crime is certainly in abeyance in many of the major cities across the nation. In the face of those things, we've got a president who has made the decision that he is going to end crime as we know it. And so my guest today happen to be two men that I know very well who've been fighting for justice in prisons. And because whether or not people want to believe it or not, there is injustice that takes place in prisons. And there clearly was a mandate in the early stages of people being locked up in this country that part of what there was rehabilitation. But rehabilitation is something that died a long time ago in prisons. And so there are people who are fighting for injustice that takes place in the prisons. My guests are two of those. I want to welcome to you, Mr. Mark Rice of Wisdom. Good morning to you, Mark. It's good to talk to you again, as always.
Good morning, Earl. Thanks for inviting us on again.
Let's talk about and let's bring in Vente Parra. Good morning to you, dear brother. It's always good to see you and talk to you. It's been a while.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having us and allowing us to join and speak on the platform.
All right. So Mark, let's talk about what Wisdom is, because you represent Wisdom.
Yes, Wisdom is a network of organizations across Wisconsin that is fighting to advance racial and economic justice. We're known for our work around overhauling the criminal legal system in Wisconsin. We also work to advance immigrant rights, and we also have a campaign that is working to advance environmental justice in Wisconsin.
And Vente, you are and have been a part of Wisdom. You are a formerly incarcerated young man who's certainly turned your life around. You want to say what?
I want to get to the gist of it, man, and not cut no corners around here, right? So we know that there's a crisis going on, because we know that shorties, we know that females, and we know that elders are innocently being slain, right? While the government, whether it's Republican, Democrat, whatever name you want to tack on to it, is out here playing politics. That's unacceptable. And you have dads that are incarcerated, right? That if these dads that have paid their debts to society have rehabilitated themselves, because like you said earlier, there's no rehabilitation inside the system. You rehabilitate yourself, or you won't be rehabilitated at all, right? So we know that. And we know that if these dads are in the homes with their children, with their shorties, then a lot of stuff that's taking place right now would not take place, because these dads that I'm talking about, the ones that have changed their lives, like similar to myself, would be there to protect, to teach, to take care of their responsibility. However, they're in the system due to rule violations, which are non-crime related, by the way. We're talking about violations of extended supervision, probation, and parole, which is unacceptable. We have the highest incarceration rate in the world. Unacceptable. So that's what I'm want to talk about. I'm pissed.
All right.
I want to talk about it.
All right, Mark. The Justice Reinvestment Campaign, what does that entail?
Yes, the Justice Reinvestment Campaign is a framework for all of the work that Wisdom is doing around what we call transformational justice. Justice Reinvestment has four main demands. Number one, we're calling for no new prisons to be built in the state of Wisconsin. Our second demand is to reduce the prison population in Wisconsin by half. And Wisconsin policymakers can do that by advancing common sense policies like expanding treatment alternatives to incarceration on the front end. They can reduce the prison population by giving people a fair chance to be released early on parole, by giving people a fair chance to have their sentences commuted. Governor Evers has the power to commute sentences. He has not utilized that power at all yet. He's done some pardons, which is rights restoration, but commutations would actually free people, liberate people from the Wisconsin state prison system. There's an earned release program that can be expanded for people who are currently incarcerated that would give people an opportunity to participate in programs and give them an opportunity to get out early. On the back end, as Vente was saying, Wisconsin is one of the worst states for reincarcerating people for convictionless rule violations. There's about 3,000 people going back to the state of Wisconsin prison system each year for revocation with no new offense, have not had any new conviction, have allegedly violated some sort of rule of supervision, and are being sent back for that. So that's a huge proportion of the population now. There's about 5,000 people back in for revocation with no new conviction. So certainly a significant proportion of the population is there. So we're calling on policymakers to end that policy of sending people back with no new conviction. And then that frees up resources. So we're also calling, the third piece is closing down prisons. We're starting by demanding that Green Bay Correctional Institution be closed down. Also, we're calling for Waupun Correctional Institution to be closed down. And for many years, we've been calling for Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility, MSDF in Milwaukee, to be closed down, three of the most inhumane prisons in the state. And all that, after we decarcerate and close prisons, that frees up a lot of resources that then can be redirected back into communities that have been most harmed by incarceration. We're talking specifically about Black and Brown and Indigenous communities, poor communities across the state. We can then take those resources, invest in jobs, healthcare, public education.
So Mark, you've covered just a lot of ground, and so very quickly, and I want to go back to the first thing that came out of your mouth, and that's people being reincarcerated with no new convictions. Let's break that down a little bit so people can kind of understand. So if I've been incarcerated and I'm now free and I didn't follow something that maybe I didn't show up, maybe I didn't do this, I can be reincarcerated because I didn't follow some rule, and I haven't committed an additional anything that I've been convicted of. Is that what we're talking about here?
Correct. Mass supervision drives mass incarceration in Wisconsin. So after a person gets out of prison, a person is on extended supervision. Previously, there was people sentenced under the old law who may still be under parole. There's a system of probation too. So that people under probation, extended supervision, or parole. And there's a number of rules that people have to follow while they're under that form of supervision. And I have one example in my own personal experience where I've been diagnosed with a disabling mental condition, and I was having a mental health crisis. And while I was under supervision in the city of Milwaukee, I was arrested for disorderly conduct. Milwaukee police officers arrested me and took me to jail a few days later. And the judge, public defender, and the prosecutor all agreed the behavior was not criminal, was not disorderly conduct. They agreed that it was a mental health crisis. The judge dismissed the case, but then my probation officer in Milwaukee, who had no specialized training in mental health issues, decided to move forward with the revocation process. And I was facing 12 years of reincarceration for that. The Department of Corrections forced me to spend 6 months in Milwaukee's kid detention facility while I was fighting that revocation process. And eventually I was able to go home. The judge gave me time served, but many people aren't that fortunate. The average amount of time people are serving for that is 18 months back in prison. And other stories that that can lift up is unauthorized computer or cell phone use. There's been people sent back for that, for crossing a county line or a state line without prior agent authorization. People have been sent back for breaking curfew, for staying up after the curfew that they have, for entering bars for alcohol or marijuana possession. Situations as minor as that, for petty violations and sometimes allegations that aren't even true. So there's could be a domestic situation where, or any sort of, you know, fight where someone can call the agent and make some sort of allegation, then find out later that it's not true, but a person could be in jail or MSDF for several days or weeks while that's being investigated. So there's due process is essentially thrown out almost completely. There's very little protection for people who are under supervision in the state.
So Mark, let me ask you, from the perspective of citizens who may say, all right, so you've been incarcerated and these rules are put in place, these stipulations are put in place. So I'm playing the devil's advocate. And these stipulations have been put in place. You're aware of it when you're released, that you've got to walk this straight line. And yet, because you've committed a crime in the past, you know that, you know, this is a stipulation, and yet you violate that, then what is the society supposed to do?
So really, there needs to be a shift in the narrative around this, that we really need to reimagine how we build safer, stronger, and healthier communities in this state. So a problem is that supervision system is becoming a tripwire to reincarceration rather than being utilized to rehabilitate people, to provide people with supportive services that they need to reintegrate into the community. That is part of what happens, but certainly there's not nearly the amount of resources that we need in order to go into that. So that's a part of the justice reinvestment vision, is that when we're actually investing in those services and supports and programs that people need, when people are being connected with jobs, housing, healthcare, educational opportunities, then those are the sorts of services that are actually going to build those safer and stronger communities that we all want and are aiming to create. But unfortunately, the system now is prioritizing profit over investment and care. So we need to certainly shift that. The focus is so much now on punishment instead of health, and that's got to be totally reversed in order to move things forward. So we really, and, you know, Vente, I'm sure, can weigh in on that as well, but certainly there's not been that investment that we need in order to connect people with what they need to actually flourish in communities. But when we have seen that, then there's many examples that we have in organizations like Wisdom, many organizations led by directly impacted people in this state. When we're connected with peer support services, when we're connected with what we actually need, then we're able to come out and really flourish and thrive. And there's so many of those success stories of people that have gotten out. And part of it is the narrative that's been built up against us. That's really a dehumanizing narrative, where this state and this country cannot incarcerate people at the rate that they've been incarcerating people unless they dehumanize people first, right? So we hear these labels being put on people. They hear people being called predator, offender, violent criminal. And so there's that, those labels follow people around, and instead of being viewed as humans, we're also students, we're employees, we're brothers, fathers, sons. And so instead of often being, you know, viewed as humans, it's, there's that process of dehumanization. And then that is really tied into the policy. So at the core of it is really shifting the narrative so that more people can be viewed as humans that are capable of really, you know, making positive contributions to society. And we know in so many situations, people like me and Vente and so many others are out here really working, we're assets to the community, right? We're really, you know, have gotten out, have gotten degrees, got, you know, supporting our families, working, contributing positively to the community. And that's more what we need to get out there, is those stories of how formerly incarcerated people are actually an asset to the community and are actually working to build safer and stronger, healthier communities.
So, so Vente, you began, you know, our conversation with your anger about, you know, what's taking place in our neighborhoods and in our communities with the really absolutely insane young people, some young people, you know, and the guns, access to guns, and you know, shooting one another and just causing all sorts of mayhem and, you know, driving these cars recklessly and causing all sorts of chaos in our neighborhoods and our communities. And there are people who are saying, hey, lock them up. They don't belong in our communities because they're causing all sorts of mayhem. I'm an elderly person. I can't go to the store because I'm afraid to drive my car because somebody's driving like they've lost their minds. We're being carjacked and all these kinds of things. Vente, what do you want to say to people in neighborhoods and communities about what they see and feel are lawless people? And so what should be done with those people?
Okay, so first and foremost, everything that you saying is correct as far as what's going on, right? So that's something that can't be debated or argued or you know, spoken anything against, right? However, you know, we could talk about what's not being done also. Because one thing about judge is there's always a remedy or a solution available. The question is it going to be applied? Because them same voices, if you pay attention, them voices, they're saying what they saying when it's, and this is not to deal with like on the racist stuff, but you know, just it's going to touch on racism. If when the shoe's on the other foot and our European counterparts, it's their children, right, that's doing similar, then it's, you know, let's get them into rehabilitation, let's get them into, you know, alternative to incarceration to get them back, you know, moving in a societal norm, right? However, when it's a child that look like similar to me and you, you know, or Latin or, you know, indigenous, it's lock them up, throw away the key. Now, we know that lock them up, throw away the key don't work due to the reality that we look at Lincoln Hills, we look at Wells, we look at all these institutions that they have locked DT, you know, they have locked youth up. Locking a youth up does not change the youth mind. And we have to, as humans and as society, we have to hold ourselves accountable for what is being instilled in the youth mind. The youth are being raised by social media. The youth are not being parented. And when youth are not parented and that mind is not cultivated and shaped and given wholesome view, you know, they've been able to view wholesome things, then they're gonna do the negative that they view. So if we're gonna hold somebody accountable, we should be hold the conglomerates accountable who own television. Because the last time I checked, a person that looked like me or you don't own television companies. We don't have the ability to say what gets played and what don't get played. We don't own radio companies. So we don't have the ability to say what's getting the rotation on the radios and what ain't getting the rotation on the radio. So we do have to hold ourselves accountable as a society for what's being projected onto the youth mind. We know the youth mind is all, we know for a reality that the youth mind is not fully developed to begin with. So we need to safeguard their mind and make sure they're not being forced to intake stuff that's unwholesome, that's perverted, that's misdirecting. We have to hold ourselves accountable for that. We can't just say they doing this and doing that without saying, what are we doing? What are we doing to prevent them from doing A, B, C, or D? Are we projecting wholesome stuff out here? Are we making available to them wholesome stuff to listen to? And even if we are or are not, are we safeguarding these children's eyes and ears to make sure that they're not, you know, intaking the stuff that's being plastered in social media, in TV, in radio? Because again, the people that's doing the most whining and complaining tend to be the ones who own all of the tools that push and project onto humanity what it wants to project onto it. And for the most part, they project wickedness. Wickedness sells. Mishap sales. All the negativity is what's selling. So of course they're not gonna, you know, stop pumping it out. They're gonna keep pumping it out, and they're gonna say, well, it's up to the parents to safeguard their children's eyes and ears. No, because y'all parents also. So it's up to y'all to play a part in this and a role in this too, so we can prevent these youth from out here stealing cars, so, popping guns, killing each other.
So, you know what I'm saying? So social media clearly, young people don't, you know, influencers who are considered to be influencers on social media, nobody checks to see the background of who the influencer is. And so you don't have any idea who that person is, but yet that person becomes famous. And now, you know, there are young people who line up and start following that influencer because nobody does a background check on that. I'm in total agreement with you that the way social media is being handled is a main problem in this nation, and children should not have access to a lot of the stuff that's on social media because, again, many people who are dealing with and doing these things on social media aren't concerned about any morality. They're only concerned about fame and fortune. And so it's up to a parent, unfortunately, to try to control that. And they can't do it. But what I hear people say is, okay, all these children, and many of the children are exposed to the same thing, but it's not the majority of the children who are committing the crimes and doing these other things. The ones who choose to do that, they do that on their own and their own volition. This is not me talking. This is what the society is saying. Your response to that?
Go ahead, Vente.
Yeah, I agree, right, to a degree. So I agree to a degree. However, the reason why it's to a degree is because, like I said earlier, it's our duty to safeguard these youth. Okay, so we know that to be true, what was being said. We have no control over the influencers, right, and what they pump out there. I say we do, because guess what? If we ain't offering them no platform to pump it out there, then that disarms them of putting unwholesome content out there and for our youth to, you know, partake in. And let me add this, because you said that it's some people that listen to it and don't behave that way. That's correct. Now, let's factor this in. Most of the ones that don't behave that way behind intake and social media, they got the mother and father in their life. They got other members of the village that's raising the nation in their life, challenged with addiction. So they may be challenged with just like that. Guess what? So a parent has challenges and nobody's helping that parent with their challenges, the child is gonna suffer also, right? So we get the parents' assistance, get them help, get them healthy, then naturally the child can be healthy also. So if they're in an unhealthy environment, what do we expect those individuals, those children to do? And when what do we expect those youth to do when they coming up in an unwholesome environment? They not being, you know, exposed to wholesomeness, you know, morals, you know, values that the wealthy, you know, tend to have access to. You get what I'm saying? So we got to, it's factors that we got, Mr. Ingram, it's factors that we have to put into place also when we talk about it. We can't just talk about it like from a standpoint of there's no other factors in it. It's just besides the influencers. No, it's other dynamics going on
I'm in agreement with you that, you know, if we have to address what's happening with young people in the society, and the answer clearly is not build more prisons. But there clearly is a segment of this nation that for a long time believed the best way to address issues is to lock people up. But I can go back, and if you read historically about prisons and what they did, they were rehabilitation places, and people were rehabilitated in prison. Somewhere along the line, they made the decision to stop rehabilitation, and that in itself, because going back historically in the 20s and the 30s, people got rehabilitated, they were released, and they were back in the community, and they served their time, and then they were able to live, you know, as if they had not committed those crimes. Mark, is that factual?
Correct. And so we've certainly seen a shift in the wrong direction over the last several decades, right? And most recently, people are still being tortured today. So to bring it up to today, Wisconsin recently had long-term lockdowns in several prisons in Waupun, Green Bay, Stanley Correctional. People are still being tortured through the overuse of solitary confinement. The United Nations considers forcing someone to spend more than 15 consecutive days in solitary confinement to be torture. Wisconsin is regularly sending people to solitary confinement for much longer periods than that still. So definitely have to address that. The conditions of confinement are horrific in many of these places, including Green Bay Correctional Institution, Waupun Correctional Institution, Milwaukee Skid Detention Facility. There's been great challenges within women's prisons as well. So that's certainly something to really bring to the forefront of this conversation, that we have to consider that people are being tortured in these places and then coming out and being expected to reintegrate. It's going to be a great challenge without that support. When, you know, people are in these really horrific conditions of confinement, it's going to make people worse. And I know from firsthand experience, about as someone living with mental illness going to these places, I've seen the devastating impact that these prisons can have on people, particularly with mental illness. People are committing suicide, attempting to commit suicide. People have been self-mutilating themselves. You know, people are getting worse in so many situations. People are already struggling oftentimes with poverty, with mental illness, with addiction issues, with housing instability. And so that's the conversation. We're shifting that to, you know, say, what would it look like if we started to fundamentally reallocate resources in this country and in the state? And that's the discussion we had during the state budget process that we just came out of, and are, you know, very disappointed in the outcomes again and are moving forward. But Governor Evers still has the power, as we said, to move a lot of this forward with or without the support of the state legislature. And there's many opportunities coming up in 2026 with state legislative races coming up, with the open race for governor now. A lot of these races in the state legislature are going to be toss-ups. There's a lot of competitive primaries as well. So we have a lot of opportunities to really shift the ground in Wisconsin in 2026 and beyond.
You know, Mark, it clearly is a situation where the governor and other politicians will say it's not popular. People are worried about crime. You talk about the fact that people are locked down for extended periods of time. There clearly are not enough prison guards to go around, not making excuses for what they're doing. And so they've got, you know, the prison population is growing, and yet less and less prison guards. And so they really don't have the manpower to handle what happens. And the answer simply can't be, well, we'll keep them locked down. So there's got to be some solution in between somewhere around. The incarcerated are younger and younger, which means that they'll be there longer and longer. And so there got to be some solutions somewhere along the way. And you say those solutions begin where?
Definitely. So first of all, I want to say that we actually did a survey with public policy polling several years ago, and it showed that actually 55% of people in the state support cutting the state's prison population in half by moving forward some of the solutions that Wisdom is advocating for. For example, by expanding the state's treatment alternatives and diversions program on the front end, which gives people suffering from mental illness and addiction issues an opportunity to be placed in community-based settings to be connected with treatment rather than going to prison or jail. Also, by giving people who are currently incarcerated an opportunity for earned release programs. And there's several ways that people can be released early. There's commutations. Governor Evers has the power to commute sentences that he hasn't utilized at all.
He has the power, but not the will.
And he promised to work with organizations like Wisdom to cut the state's prison population in half when he first ran. So that's a matter of us holding him accountable to that, or holding future candidates accountable to that as well. There's an earned release program that can be expanded through increased funding in the state budget. There's people still sentenced under old law who are eligible for parole. Parole is almost completely shut down under the leadership of John Erpenbach. And there's still about 1,600 people eligible for parole in the state. On the back end, we mentioned before, we can greatly reduce the number of people being sent back with no new conviction, no new offense at all, who are under supervision being sent back for rule violations. It's a totally absurd policy that's at odds with common sense approaches to justice. Many other states have made those changes years ago to cut down on that, which freed up so many resources that they're actually utilizing to strengthen communities. So that those are some of the solutions that we're seeing. And then, like we say, then we can take those resources, we can actually start closing prisons and then taking resources to build communities. And also we can put those resources back into programs and services for people who are still incarcerated to really decrease the likelihood that people are going to return to prison. So definitely, but when you look at it, the communities all across the country were devastated by policies like the 94 crime bill at the federal level, by truth and sentencing.
Yeah, three strikes are out. Yes. Truth and sentencing, no parole.
Right.
Are they still under that? Are we still working under the auspices of that?
Yes, that's a goal. Wisdom's part of a national network called the Gamaliel Network, and we have a national transformational justice campaign. One of our priority campaigns is to repeal harmful bills like the 94 crime bill. And we have a justice reinvestment platform at the national level too. But in Wisconsin, that bill had a particularly devastating impact on Wisconsin because Wisconsin took the financial incentives to build more prisons, to push through very harsh sentencing laws like truth and sentencing here, which after truth and sentencing was passed, we saw supervision sentences lengthen, prison sentences lengthen. And now Wisconsin has one of the worst supervision systems in the entire country. By many measures, we partnered with Columbia University in New York to do a study called the Wisconsin Community Corrections Story. We've partnered with Health Impact Partners in Oakland to do a study on excessive revocations in Wisconsin. So we've partnered with some of the nation's leading research institutions to really document it, and also brought in the lived experience of people who've been impacted by the system to combine the quantitative data with the lived experience. And, you know, it's been still a lot of resistance in the state of Wisconsin, but we're building, like I said, and really have opportunities to shift the ground. And we saw some success during the pandemic, right? So Governor Evers, we'll have to give him credit for depopulating Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility during the beginning of the COVID pandemic. We showed that it is possible to decarcerate a prison. They brought the population to MSDF, Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility, in Milwaukee to almost zero. It had been overcrowded since it had opened back over 20 years ago. And within a few weeks, former Secretary of Department of Corrections, Kevin Carr, decided to make some policy changes, to move a few of the policy changes that we had been organizing to get pushed through forward. So they released all of the people who are within MSDF who are in there for what they call alternative to revocation programs, which is about a quarter of the population, moved those programs to community-based settings. And then they released almost 2,000 people who were incarcerated in jails and in MSDF and state prisons for allegations for those alleged rule violations that did not involve any serious new charges. And so, but they didn't continue on with it. They've reversed course. They're starting to send more people back for those same policies. But we saw that that worked, and it was no adverse impact on public safety. So there's evidence that it works. Even in Wisconsin, they did it during the pandemic, but did not continue on with it. So we really need to get back to those common sense policies that we already saw worked in Wisconsin. We've seen work in red and blue states throughout the country.
So before we go back to Vente, the cost of a person being incarcerated per year, you don't know what those numbers are. And I know they're out there somewhere, but I guess the reason I'm asking that question is there's always been conversation about for-profit prisons. Truth in Sentencing, Three Strikes, You're Out, No Parole, which was something ushered in that 94 crime bill under Bill Clinton and then Scott Walker being the governor. And Jess, I remember what transpired during that time and the explosion of prisons and people being locked up. And so it hasn't diminished at all, Mark. It's there's no parole and those kinds of things. You don't see that changing.
In Wisconsin, in other states, there has been decarceration. In Wisconsin's behind many other states. So I feel like there's, and sometimes I feel like Wisconsin's 20, 30 years behind
right.
a lot of other states on this. So we have to really take that into consideration, how far, how much of an outlier Wisconsin is, particularly around the community supervision system is. That's what studies have consistently shown. There was another study that just came out from Council of State Governments that shows that Wisconsin is spending more than any other state to send people back to prison for these convictionless rule violations. So that's, again, a huge waste of resources that we could instead be utilizing to strengthen communities. So it's been slow, but now we're starting to see more and more elected officials and candidates start to speak up, and our organizing is starting to build up that support, build a coalition of support across the state. And like I said, 2026 is a huge opportunity where we're going to tie our what we call our integrated voter engagement work to with our issue work and really get candidates to take a stand on these issues. And we have some, particularly in Madison and Milwaukee, that have been really taking a stand on these issues. Really, we've seen Governor Evers step up and veto a few really bad bills. There was a voter suppression bill that Governor Evers just vetoed recently. He also vetoed a bill that would have increased the prison population and would have required the state of Wisconsin to build at least two more prisons. So we're seeing Governor Evers utilize that power to prevent a lot of this really horrific legislation from moving forward. So that's one positive sign where, without if Walker or someone else was still in the time, Tim Michaels was in there, a lot of that legislation would likely be moving forward. So I think that's one positive to take out of it. And I've seen steps, at the local level as well to, there's some bipartisan support now for some legislation, like expanding the treatment alternatives diversion program so that it can be utilized for mental health programming. It's actually, there's a bill sponsored by Senator Jock and by Representative Tittle, two Republican legislators who really understand and are with us on expanding treatment alternatives. There's been an increasing amount of support from Republicans for pushing through a bill to end juvenile life without parole. So we're starting to see bills, some bipartisan support on some bills. There's been a bill that expanded reentry resources in Milwaukee to build a reentry hub there that was supported by Republicans. And, we've seen some Republicans come out in support of expanding earned release opportunities. So we're seeing a split even within the Republican Party, where more Republicans are starting to realize that they've been going in the wrong direction. They need to challenge their party leadership to come back and, start moving Wisconsin in a more common sense direction around this criminal legal system, because they're on track to bankrupt the state by building more prisons and, by incarcerating more people. It's not sustainable, and for one thing, but also it's devastating from a human dignity perspective. We definitely have to bring it back to that, to realize the harm that's been caused to so many people across the state and even family members of Republicans, right? Remember John Nygren had a daughter who was directly impacted by the system. And, as Vente said, there's the two different systems. Certainly the racial justice component is huge, because Nygren actually passed bills when it was impacting white people in rural areas, they passed a package of bills that, you know, included some steps to address those issues. But we need to, you know, certainly we're going to continue to push the, you know, that it's totally unacceptable for Wisconsin to be incarcerating Black people and Indigenous people at the highest rate in the country by some measures. And that's totally unacceptable. And organizations like WISDOM will continue to lift that up and fight to change it.
You know, Vente, having a son who is mentally ill myself, the fact that there's so many people who are imprisoned, who are mentally ill, is incomprehensible. And I think that many people in this country don't even realize that. It is unacceptable and a calumny to say that a person who is mentally ill should be locked away in prison when there was a time in this society that people with mental illnesses were treated in a different manner. But clearly locking them away in prison is not the answer.
Earl, you know, just to be transparent with you, right? Man, I've been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, institutionalization, bipolarism, and anxiety attacks. So I even myself challenged and I wrestle with psychological challenges, right? Mental right. Institute, whatever you want to, Mr. whatever you want to call it, right? Whatever they want to put on it. The reality is, ain't no human being been normal since the fall of mankind. Since sin into the world, we ain't been normal to begin with. However, in spite of all that, as you said earlier, the mental stuff is addressed different from ethnicity to ethnicity. We know that our European counterparts don't lock up and throw away the key when it comes to they mentally challenged, you know, mentally unstable, whatever you want to title you want to put on to it, individuals of they community, right? So if we know that they don't do it to their own, and they because they realize that it doesn't help, it doesn't work, why would they be okay with, why would they feel comfortable with doing it to other ethnicities, you know, practicing this? You get what I'm saying?
Let me ask you, Vente, since crimes are caused or against people who live in the same community, for instance, most of the crimes that are caused
for one, they know it don't work.
Let me finish my point. Since crimes are committed, most of the crimes that are committed in the Black community are committed by Blacks. Most of the crimes that are committed in the white communities against whites are committed by whites. And so again, as I said to you, I have a son who's bipolar and schizophrenic. I know the realities of it. But if somebody has committed a crime and they're Black and they committed that crime against a Black person, you know, it's hard to say that's racial, because that victim of that crime is somebody who looked like them. Now, same thing in a white community. If a white person committed a crime against a white person, the crime has been committed against an innocent person. I'm not one who disagrees with you that disproportionately Black people and people of color are locked up in the society. It's a racistic society. It always has been. It always will be. So I'm in total agreement with you that a lot of this and that the amount of people who are locked up longer and for crimes at the root of them, and anybody can, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out, that people are locked up. If they're Black, they're going to be locked up longer. The system has always been that. It's not just, it never has been, and it never will be. But what I'm saying to you is, we've still got to figure a way, because the crimes that are being committed against people in our communities, just unacceptable, man. Yeah, and I and
it,
I
it, it is equally. Go ahead, Elder.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm going to say it's equally unacceptable to provide the resources required to prevent people from even going down that road to begin with. If we got healthcare resources, we got mental resources, we got financial resources, and I'm saying implement it appropriately. If you go to the suburbs, right? The school system in the suburbs is totally different than the school system in the inner city.
No question.
They being taught something totally different. So if they being taught survival skills like how to hunt, how to shoot guns, how to, you know, all these things that we do as a society, right? What if those, some of them similar resources, those similar practices or teachings was taught to those in the inner city? Do you think it'd be as much gun violence, as much, you know, foolishness that's going on in the inner city? You think it'd be as much? I ain't saying it ain't gonna be none now. We ain't naive. We know that there's sin. We know people gonna commit crimes. We know that. I'm just saying that if the resources were balanced out, you know, if the tools required for a one to thrive in society were also implemented and given to those who are doing these crimes, right? The tables would be different. It would turn the tables and things would be totally different. It wouldn't be what we're seeing right now, because we know that if people don't have, right, most of the time when people don't have, they're going to figure out ways to go get what they don't have. Now, I'm not excusing crime. I'm not excusing violence. I'm not excusing senseless stuff. I'm just saying in general. Right? I'm speaking in general. People going to go do what they got to do to get what they got to get to survive. Right.
So we got to
address it. You know?
Listen. You and I know that there is not a level playing field. And the truth of the matter is, in this nation, there's never going to be a level playing field. All right? I'm 71 years old. I know it's not going to be. And so that injustice continues. And I don't think that anything's going to change that, because it's the way the nation was founded. But at the root of it is, we still can't allow or continue to accept and use the rationale that I should be able to stick a gun in somebody's face because racism and discrimination caused me to do it. Let me do this. So as we get ready to wrap this up, Mark, Justice Reinvestment Campaign, sum that up briefly.
Yes. Justice Reinvestment Campaign. We're calling, first of all, for no new prisons to be built in the state of Wisconsin. We're calling for the state's prison population to be cut in half by advancing common sense decarceration policies in the state. We're calling for prisons to be closed down, including Green Bay Correctional Institution, Waupun Correctional Institution, and Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility. And finally, we're calling for resources saved to be redirected back into the communities that have been most disproportionately harmed and back into programs and services for currently incarcerated people. So, and we have a big action coming up. I definitely want to mention there's an action at the governor's mansion, August 23rd, 11 a.m. to noon, where WISDOM leaders and organizers from throughout the state are going to be coming there. There's going to be some directly impacted speakers. We're going to be calling on Governor Evers and state legislators to move justice reinvestment forward. And we're going to be calling on candidates for state Senate and state assembly and governor to really prioritize these issues and really stand on these issues and let them know that we're not going to support any candidate that is not fighting to move this justice reinvestment vision forward. And so now, and it's definitely time for that. And Vente and I have a training coming up in Milwaukee on August 21st, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Welford Sanders Enterprise Center about the Transformational Justice Campaign. We've also got an organization called Supporters of Incarcerated People. We're going to be lifting up the issue work, lifting up our organizing work, getting people connected. So it's opportunities for community building, opportunities for the community to come out and to learn more about what we're doing and how they can get involved in advancing justice in this policy area in the state of Wisconsin. So we're definitely urging directly impacted people and people who have loved ones who've been impacted by the system to show up for that training.
All right. My
information is at wisdomwisconsin.org, our website. And you can check me out on social media, Ricer Mark, R-I-C-E-R-M-A-R-K, on social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X, and LinkedIn as well.
All right. I want to thank Mr. Mark Rice and Vente Parra. Gentlemen, it's been a long time. You and I, you, myself, Mark, and Vente, we go back, what, 12 years, 15 years? We've been doing this a long time, man. It's been a long time since we had you guys on, but I guarantee you it won't be so long the next time.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, man. We'll talk soon.